Today, what happened when a powerful hacking tool was sold to governments around the world? Part one of a major international investigation from The Guardian.
Hello.
Hi.
I can see that you're there. Steph is there. Martin is there. Mike Safi's there. We're waiting for David Pegg and Dan Sabat and Sam Cutler. So I think we have everyone we need to kick off.
For the last 2 months, these were the only calls I had with my colleagues, with anyone really, where I felt like no one else could be on the line, listening in. I know that sounds paranoid, but lately I've come to see my phone as a kind of intruder, like something that follows me around all day, even while I sleep, watching, taking notes, sending them somewhere.
Great. Okay, and then Mike Safi, last but not least.
Yes. First thing is, of the two India stories, we are in a position to approach at least two people for forensics pretty imminently.
So when I had these conversations with my Guardian colleagues around the world, it wasn't on my phone. It was on a device I can't tell you about, using an app we're keeping secret, with accounts registered to code names. Like I said, paranoid. That's kind of how it's been over the past few months. Because for that whole time, The Guardian has been working with news organisations around the world, including Le Monde, Die Zeit, and The Washington Post, on a story that we think has implications for everybody. Today we publish the first reports from a major international investigation. It's about what happened when governments around the world got their hands on a digital weapon, spyware, from a company called NSO Group, that could hack virtually any mobile phone without leaving a trace. Or so they thought.
Is this data set got a name? You know, like, is it the Pegasus Papers or something? I mean, does it have a name?
The project is called the Pegasus Project.
From The Guardian, I'm your new host, Michael Safi. Today in Focus, The Pegasus Project, Part 1, An Invitation to Paris. A few months ago, The Guardian was messaged by French journalists from an organisation called Forbidden Stories. They said they had a story they wanted to discuss with us, but it couldn't be over the phone. Paul Lewis, head of Guardian Investigations, took the lead.
We arranged to have a conversation over a secure platform, and they spoke with me and a couple of other colleagues at The Guardian. And you sort of know when someone's got a very good story because they are deliberately very vague and evasive. So it was very little they could tell us, but they gave us the broad contours. And the most important part, I think, of what they said was that they had a leak of data. The only way our friends at Forbidden Stories were going to tell us any more details were if we went to meet them in person in Paris. It's not a particularly easy thing to do in the midst of a pandemic, but we found a way to do it.
Paul put a team together, including me. I was briefed that the data appeared to come from clients of NSO Group. I had done a little bit of work on them, but I didn't know much. I knew they were an Israeli company and the biggest players in a secretive multi-billion dollar industry selling hacking tools to countries like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. I flew in from Beirut. It was a weird time to be in Paris. Mostly we locked ourselves in our rooms. Cafes and shops were still shut. There was a curfew and the streets were pretty empty. It was like that film 28 Days Later, but with Deliveroo. I went to meet my colleagues who had come to France. There was Paul, wearing an intense expression that I thought was just anticipation for what we were about to see. Later I'd realise that's just Paul. And there was a journalist called Sam Cutler, this tech genius. People call him a digital Swiss Army knife, but sometimes his methods are a bit more low-tech. In a recent investigation, during lockdown, the office was empty and we couldn't send secret files over the internet, so Sam personally cycled them around London. So we went to the offices of Forbidden Stories. They offered us coffee, and then they told us to put our phones in a box. And then they took the box away and put it in another room. So we were sitting there in the tiny office of what looked like a tech startup, but we were about to see something that we suspect even the most advanced intelligence agencies didn't know existed.
There was a laptop.
Passwords, lots of them.
Various secure protocols.
But then, finally, we were in.
And I remember looking at what was a stream of phone numbers with different country codes all over the world. Tens of thousands of phone numbers.
And these phone numbers belonged to people who had been selected by customers of NSO in advance of a possible hack. These customers were governments who had bought NSO spying software, Pegasus.
Well, I think the first thing people need to know about Pegasus is that if you've been hit by it, you won't know it. It's silent.
Stephanie Kish-Gustner is an investigative reporter with The Guardian, based in Washington. She was the other person with us in Paris. She flew in from DC a couple of days later. If you're hiding something, you definitely don't want Steph on your case. She never stops. I'm not even sure she sleeps. I'll text her sometimes on the other side of the world saying, I know it's after midnight where you are. Don't reply to this until the morning. And then I see those three dots and she replies. She's broken some of the highest profile stories about the surveillance industry. Do you remember the story about how Jeff Bezos got his phone hacked?
We're learning new details of an extraordinary claim that Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos' phone was hacked by Saudi Arabia. The Guardian reports an investigation ordered by Bezos.
Over the last couple of years, Steph has become very, very interested in NSO Group and how their Pegasus spyware infects phones.
You might have a missed call on your phone and you might think it's weird, or you might have clicked on a message that says there's a delivery coming to your house. If you've unintentionally, you know, invited Pegasus into your phone by clicking on that, it basically means you've invited a foreign government to be inside your phone. And that means they can listen to your phone conversations. They can look at your photos. They can read your messages. They can get your address book. If you are holding a phone that's been infected with Pegasus and you're walking around, whoever is in that phone, whoever is monitoring that phone, will know exactly where you are. And if you think you're protected because you use Signal or WhatsApp or Telegram, you will be wrong, because none of that will protect you because they're already inside your phone. So all that's pretty bad. But I actually think one of the scariest features, because it's essentially a malware that is allowing an outsider to like remotely control your phone. And so that means they can also press the recorder on and off. So if you're in a meeting or wherever you are, even if you're, you know, in your home having a conversation with your family at dinner, that phone can be turned on and off and can be recording your conversations.
Whenever someone explains what Pegasus can do, how powerful it is, genuinely, it's terrifying. That it could take my messages, be looking at my pictures, reading my emails, literally seeing where I am at any point in the day. Like, I'd be a little red dot moving around on a map on the screen of someone spying on me. And I ask myself, how is a private company allowed to sell this? NSO's answer is that there are bad guys out there, and this tool helps catch them.
So I think the best quote from NSO's perspective is from an executive who's now no longer at the company. But she said, you know, this is for the Bin Ladens of the world.
It's not a mass surveillance tool, and it's here in order to fight the Bin Ladens of the world. You know, I visited Ground Zero yesterday here in New York, and I was thinking to myself, what if this technology was available before 9/11? How many lives could have been saved by having the ability to get into the encrypted messages of terrorist attacks?
That is how this product is sold. You can buy our product, license our product. We will only sell it to governments and law enforcement agencies. And we will do, you know, due diligence to make sure those are good customers and aren't going to abuse our product.
I need to summarize what NSO does, I think in a bottom line, NSO saves lives. This is what we do. If I go a bit deeper, we're a software company and we develop...
The company has said, you know, several times that they have saved thousands and thousands of lives, that they have that the use of this technology by law enforcement officials has saved lives and has stopped bad things from happening. But they don't offer really any details of what those things are, but it's repeated a lot. And what you always get covering this company is this sort of, we do all these great things, but we can't talk about them.
It might be true that Pegasus helps to catch terrorists and criminals, and we don't hear about it. But the problem for NSO Group is, what we do hear about is the way Pegasus can be abused. The most infamous allegation involves a friend of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered in 2018.
A US intelligence report has concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman personally approved the murder of the exiled journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. He was killed while visiting the Saudi consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul. The declassified report says the prince approved a plan to either capture or kill Khashoggi, who had criticized the Saudi regime.
In that case, Saudi Arabia is accused of using Pegasus to spy on Omar Abdul Aziz, a Saudi dissident who was a close associate of Khashoggi. NSO Group have always denied their software had anything to do with that murder.
I think it's about, in that case and in so many others, about the government kind of keeping track of people who might be causing trouble or keeping track and trying to get an edge on understanding what activists are doing, what journalists are writing about, who's talking to them, who their sources are. I mean, there's any limit of really what can be done with a tool like this. So, you know, a lot of people call it a weapon, and I agree that it's a weapon. I mean, it's definitely a weapon technically because it goes through an export process in Israel, which is for weapons. But some people sort of scoff at it because obviously targeting Pegasus to a phone isn't gonna flatten a city the way that a bomb would. But it creates so much invisible damage that's not immediately apparent. One thing that some of these researchers I talk to say a lot is this is a product that really invites abuse. It's hard to almost not abuse it because it's such great power.
Coming up, a leak of tens of thousands of phone numbers pointing to a trail of abuse. So we're back in Paris, and our Guardian team are crowded around that laptop screen, trying to absorb this huge leak, getting lost in this endless scroll of phone numbers.
The difficult thing about phone numbers is they're just numbers, right? You don't have names attached to them. So my immediate thought was a massive body of work here is going to be finding out who are the people who owned these phones at the time. But luckily, our friends in Paris had already done a lot of that work, and so besides some of these phone numbers, there were names. Bear in mind that NSO has always said its technology is only used to target criminals and terrorists. We were seeing the names of human rights lawyers having confidential discussions with their clients. They were journalists, investigative reporters, holding governments to account. Journalists including Rula Khalaf, the editor of the Financial Times, and many others who worked at the New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The Economist, Reuters, AP. We were seeing activists all over the world in Azerbaijan, in Kazakhstan, in Morocco. We were seeing the names of presidents, prime ministers, heads of state. I mean, it was staggering.
To be clear, the numbers we were looking at were not people who had definitely been hacked. To confirm that, we'd have to do a lot more work. But it was a list of more than 50,000 phone numbers that since 2016, we believed had been selected as persons of interest by governments with access to Pegasus.
It was unprecedented. Data of this kind had not been leaked before, certainly pertaining to the use of NSO Group's technology by governments around the world. We'd never seen on this scale. But also, if you think back to the major disclosures and revelations around surveillance over the years, even the most significant one that springs to mind, the disclosures by Edward Snowden, they were revealing for the most part, the apparatus, the infrastructure that GCHQ and the NSA in the United States use to surveil populations. And so for the first time, here was a list of numbers which we felt confident would become names, which would become faces and people who you could relate to.
Everyone's reaction when they first saw this data was a little different. I was thinking, whoa, here were the numbers of some of the most powerful people in the world, and their phones had potentially been compromised. Some of their most sensitive conversations could have been bugged. We believe the data showed us at least 10 different government clients, including Saudi, the UAE, Hungary, India, Mexico, Rwanda, not all countries with great human rights records. So I was astonished. I just wanted to get started. When Steph saw it, though, she seemed worried, like there was suddenly a lot of weight on her shoulders.
You just have to realize that in order to write some of the stories that I did in the past, just trying to confirm that someone had been targeted, that an individual had been targeted, was like weeks and weeks of work. You know, these are not easy stories to get. And that's, you know, a targeting of one person. And so suddenly, I'm looking at actual records. This was not, you know, a few dozen numbers. Frankly, we would have gone to Paris for a few dozen numbers because it's that important. But these were thousands, you know, tens of thousands. What felt really kind of overwhelming as a reporter is how we could possibly do justice to this treasure trove of information. And so to me, as excited as I was almost also very overwhelmed from the first moment because there's a real sense of responsibility.
But Steph also thought maybe this time something would change.
It felt like a lie was really being exposed for the first time in a way that there was never going to be a way to explain it away with some PR campaign.
Paul was already thinking about the challenges ahead. Running an international investigation in the middle of a pandemic across more than a dozen media organizations where no one could freely use their phones, and any mistake might blow the investigation, or worse, put people in danger.
You know, a mobile phone for a journalist is like an indispensable tool. We use them all day, every day, not just for emails or private messaging, phone calls. I mean, you know, it's like not using a notepad or a laptop. I mean, it was really difficult to get our head around how we would operate without recourse to our phones. We've had to adopt a great deal of techniques, precautions that I think we haven't done on this level since the Edward Snowden disclosures in 2013. We've had to be much more careful.
Because at every step of this investigation, there's always been the possibility that a foreign government with access to Pegasus could very easily, and without our knowledge, turn our phones on, activate the microphones.
I mean, this sounds a bit fantastical, but it's what happened. And, you know, one sort of sobering moment for me was the realization that partners who were working with us on this project, fellow journalists who were working with us, talking to us on a regular basis, discovered infections of Pegasus on their phones. This wasn't a theoretical risk. It was a very real one. And so we had to significantly adjust everything we did. So that means, you know, things as basic as making sure that your phone is nowhere near you when you're talking to colleagues. Every time I spoke with our head of legal, Jill Phillips, who is indispensable to an investigation like this, we went for a walk in the park and left our phones behind. I ended up, for the duration of this project, putting all of my phones between two mattresses in my spare bedroom.
Okay, that does sound a little paranoid, but maybe now you understand how it got to this. But don't think this is just a story about journalists. What we saw in Paris has much wider implications. If you've got a mobile phone, you should be worried too.
Our phones are like extensions of our human body these days. You know, they're never beyond a quick grasp or quick reach. They're on the table, or they're on your desk, or they're on the sofa. They're there all the time. And if they're turned into listening devices, they'll capture everything. I mean, it's you don't want to overstate these things, but it is genuinely a level of surveillance that was beyond anything that even George Orwell imagined in 1984. It's become part and parcel of the lives we live, and we can't live our lives without them. That's the bind. That's the problem.
In statements issued through its lawyers, NSO denied what it said were false claims made about the activities of its clients, but said it would continue to investigate all credible claims of misuse and take appropriate action. It said the leak of records could not be a list of numbers targeted by governments using Pegasus, and described the 50,000 figure as exaggerated. Tomorrow, the story of a small group of cyber defence researchers playing cat and mouse with NSO Group for the past 5 years. But who's the cat and who's the mouse? That's all for today. Every few hours, The Guardian and its partners are publishing new stories from this project. Some of the initial revelations include a report by Guardian journalist Sean Walker on how Viktor Orban's government in Hungary, an EU member state, used Pegasus against both investigative journalists and a circle around one of the country's last remaining independent media owners. Plus, reaction from Edward Snowden, who we'll be hearing from on this podcast later this week. The Pegasus Project has been reported by Stephanie Kish-Gusner in Washington, Paul Lewis, David Pegg, Dan Saber, and Sam Cutler in London, Nina Lacani in Mexico City, Sean Walker in Budapest, and Angelique Chrysophus in Paris, and me, Michael Safi. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly, music and sound design by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson.